Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
Is that War Rocket Ajax? To bring back his body?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts, back with you for another 90-odd minutes here on this wonderful time of day. I don't know when you listen to this. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you today?
Chris, I am doing just fine. I'm excited to do what we're doing on this episode. We're bringing back a relatively new concept in the world of podcasting.
Yeah, it's this hot new thing that no one has done before, where two white dudes in their 30s talk about media they have consumed.
Yep, it's going to be very exciting.
I think it's going to catch on.
You know, we can only hope to root for this sort of content. You know, we have to burgeon it and make it into something that will grow. So that's what we're going to do. We're bringing back the old Rex mix. I've written down on my notes, Rex remix.
Matt, I have rarely felt as bad as I feel about initially dismissing Rex mix as a title, because it's perfect. And now Rex remix it's so good. It's so very good, Matt.
Well, as with all of history, I will be born out to be correct.
It's usually how it happens.
Anyway, we're going to do that on this show as I prepare to leave for a week and Chris prepares to mourn me being on for a week. And I don't know if that means we'll have no show next week or what. We'll get to that when we do checks.
It's just going to be me alone.
Oh, like that one episode I did by myself?
Did you do an episode by yourself? I don't remember this.
I invite everybody, if it's available, I invite everyone to go back and listen to that episode that I did by myself when I took listener questions. That was like within the first year of me being a co-host on this show, I believe.
Where was I?
I don't remember.
Just didn't show up that day. Podcasting's tough, Matt. I can't be doing it every night.
I think you were at a convention or something. This kind of loose, wonderful talk is what you're going to get for the whole rest of this episode. But first, Chris, before we do any more of that, we need to do some business. And that's going to start with thanking our newest supporters on Patreon.
That's right, Matt. It's a brand new month for us, although it has been a new month for you for about a week. And we would like to thank the people who have gone on down to 475 Gimmick Street, to that old internet cafe, and they've logged on to patreon.com/warrocketajax, where they can chip in as little as $1 a month, and they can help keep this show going. Help us do Every Story Ever specials, help us do Movie Fighters and Snack Situation, and most of all, help us pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills.
You know it, Chris. And I have two names to read this week, starting with Justin Martin.
Oh, thank you, Justin.
And also we have Andrew Kehoe.
Thank you, Andrew.
If you would like to be like those wonderful, beautiful people, Justin and Andrew, and help us keep doing this show, keep doing Every Story Ever specials every month, keep doing Snack Situation, keep doing Movie Fighters, Comics Catch-Up, which you got just this week, you can head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax, as Chris mentioned, and as he also mentioned, kick in as little as $1 per month to make sure that we keep doing all of that for you. You get ad-free episodes of everything that we do, and other cool bonuses like bonus audio, line-stepping privileges for our list segments, and more. So go check that out if you are so inclined. Chris, with that, it's time to make some checks. So come on and diggity check yourself before you wreck yourself. Now, Chris, we will have more wrecks to come.
Mm-hmm.
But we should check in, as we so often do. What do you have to check in with this week?
Matt, this is usually your provenance, but I would like to announce a format change for the show.
Hmm.
There's been a big shift, something that I think a lot of people were anticipating. And it's been a long time coming, Matt, and it's something that I've been very excited about. I think you've been very excited about it. And that is that after 7 years, the Win a Date with Gavin Jasper contest is finally over.
Thank God.
If you'll recall, a long time ago, we did the episodes, which unfortunately you were not there for, Matt, but we did the live episodes from King of Trios. And one of the people we were with there was Gavin Jasper, who, if you remember the old comics blogging circuit, he was one of the guys who was around on Fourth Letter and is still around on Den of Geek, writing some very good stuff, primarily about Venom and fighting games, which are his two passions in life. But now he has a new passion. Gavin got married, thus putting an end to our often just still open after all these years, Win a Date with Gavin Jasper contest that I don't know if anyone ever entered, unfortunately.
The date was won.
A date happened. I don't know if it was won on the show, and I have my doubts.
I made no insinuation that it was won on the show. Merely that it was won.
But that means that I actually went up to Gavin's wedding this past weekend, which was great. Gavin's wife is a lovely woman named Bridget, so congratulations to Gavin and Bridget. I got to see David Brothers and hang out with him, and let me tell you, if you find yourself at a wedding where you have flown to get there, and it's a place you've never been to before, and your wife didn't come with you because she had grad school that day, I suggest you find David Brothers and just talk to him about comic books for an hour while you eat dinner and enjoy the wedding hospitality. Always just talk about the same things you always talk about when you're in a new social situation. That's my rule.
It's a very specific recommendation.
Yeah.
And I appreciate it.
But no, it was a really fun time. It was great to see Gavin, to see David, to see David Burson was also there at Chudley Cannons, who you might remember was also around for those King of Trios specials. Just a very, very good time had by all, I think, and a very fun weekend. But yeah, we can officially close it, Matt. Put the stamp on it. Win a Date with Gavin Jasper is over.
Okay, I can take out this huge file of open cases.
Open bits.
And mark off one of them. Neil in the Kitchen is still here. HQC is huge.
The machine gets a lot of play these days.
The machine is in here. The Bag of Salt is, I've dusted it off right now. Still a lot of open bits, but I can close that one. Marking it off the whiteboard.
Should we get an open bits and closed bits page on warrocketwiki.com?
All right, so there's one closed bit and dozens and dozens of open bits.
There's
on
probably
that page.
More closed bits than we are thinking of right now.
Maybe so. Certainly retired bits.
Certainly we got tired of them bits.
Yes.
I think.
Look, if somebody on War Rocket Wiki wanted to start a canonical page called Bits and then separate those bits into open and closed bits, I would condone it.
I would also condone that if that happens. If that were to happen at this wiki that I believe only you and I are checking every now and then.
Oh, people check it, Chris. Trust me. People check this wiki.
And speaking of checking, Matt,
what
would you like to check in with today?
Let's start a wiki page called Segways.
I'm very good at them.
I have two things to check in with. One is...
Two checks?
Dose checks.
You double checking?
Buddy, I'm checking once. I'm checking twice. first check is something I mentioned earlier. It is that I will be out of town next week, which could result in there being a guest host on the show or no show at all. I guess you will find out at some point next week. That is number one on the list. Number two, I wanted to bring up something that you may have seen if you follow me on Instagram or on Twitter, something I'm very excited about. I have been in talks for the past few weeks with the folks who run a group for writers here in the Asheville area in Western North Carolina called the Flatiron Writers Room. And they offer writing classes to people at varying levels of accomplishment within the world of writing. And I talked to them about potentially doing a seminar slash class for them at some point in 2020. And that has culminated in me doing essentially a self-publishing comics class. That is going to happen next January. It's three sessions starting in January, and they will be on Tuesdays. So if you are in the Asheville area and would like to take that class, I would highly recommend signing up for it. There's an Eventbrite page for it right now where you can sign up. I tried my best to keep the price fairly affordable for anybody who wants to take it. The actual dates of the class are January 14th, January 21st, and January 28th. So there are three sessions, and it'll be everything from scripting to collaborating with an artist to essentially being your own editor and publisher to wrangling a team to finding a printer to going to conventions and promoting your work and even more. So a lot of it will be kind of determining what kind of story you can tell in comics. So I'm excited about it. I'm really looking forward to teaching this class, and I think the people who run the writer's room are excited to have it because they think some younger people might get involved because of it. So if you're one of those younger people and you would like to take that class, if you're in the area, please do.
I've always said that Matt Wilson is like Wu-Tang.
For the children.
For the children.
I was going to make the joke about those who can't teaching.
Mm.
But I did. I mean, I did. I have.
Yeah, but you did. You have. You can.
So I guess I won't make that joke. All right. Those are our checks. Rex to come. But Chris, before that, let's do some comics reviews.
I would love to. Wait, did you do both of your checks?
I did.
What was the first one?
The first one was very short. I'm going to be out of town.
Oh, right. Okay, sorry, Matt. Sorry. Let's talk about some comics.
So, Chris, I think we should kick it off with what might be the biggest release of the week. Legion of Superheroes, number one. The start of the new take on Legion of Superheroes. It has been about 8 years since there was a Legion of Superheroes comic.
Yeah, I don't know if it's been that long, but I do know that the two Legion comics that launched with the New 52 did not stick around very long. So yeah, 7 years, 8 years. Yeah.
It's been that long.
For a team that was more or less in continuous publication since 1958. Yes. It's been a while.
And I think you're going to come at this book from different approaches because Chris, I think you can call yourself pretty undoubtedly a Legion guy.
Oh yeah, I am 100% a Legion guy. There was a time when I had I don't believe I have them anymore, but there was a time when I had physically every issue of Legion of Superheroes from like 1980 to present, and everything else. Wherever the archives stopped, I had everything else. And I like the Legion. I especially like the Silver Age Legion. I kind of think it's one of those books that doesn't only work in the Silver Age, but that's the Legion as far as I'm concerned. Like I don't think it ever quite hit those heights again, even though there's a lot of stuff that I like that came after.
I am not a Legion guy.
No, you are not.
I've never been one. It always has sort of eluded me as a concept. But I read this first issue and enjoyed it greatly.
Yeah. You know what it reminded me of?
What's
like
that?
The experience of reading this? Guardians of the Galaxy, originally, was Marvel's answer to Legion, right? Like, it's their 30th century future comic. And I remember reading that first issue, you know, the original concept of Guardians of the Galaxy. Obviously, that changed and became something very different and much more well-known in this modern world. I remember reading that first Brian Bendis issue of Guardians of the Galaxy and literally getting, like, four panels into it and being like, this is not for me. This is not working. I do not enjoy this approach to these characters, to science fiction, to that aspect of storytelling or of superheroes. I read this book and, like, throughout I was like, oh, this rules, actually, it turns out. I love the way this book introduces its what makes it different. And what makes it different is how the Earth is set up. Which actually, if you were reading Millennium, which you should, because much as I suspected, OMAC did show up in Legion of Superheroes : Millennium number 2. Like, the idea of the kind of new Earth was introduced there, but I loved seeing it here, and I loved John Kent's reaction to it. And John Kent is not, like, a character that I really have a ton of affection for. You know?
Yeah, I understand that. At the same time, for me, John Kent is my connection to this book. He's my hook into this book.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think one of the sticking points with Legion for me for a long time has been it felt at best tangentially connected to the DC universe.
Mm-hmm.
It's so far in the future that it's really hard to sort of find that connection, find where it fits, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I know Superboy was in the Legion back in the Silver Age, but I didn't have any connection to that Superboy, you know? It being John Kent here kind of makes everything snap into place for me. And it even works with what's been going on in the Superman books, with John being on, you know, his space adventure with Jor-El and everything. So, like, it all just kind of clicked. And the idea of there being, like, so many Legionnaires is even kind of addressed in here, where it's like, yeah, this whole thing, everything you see is our Legion headquarters, you know?
Oh, did you love the Fritchman boxes?
Uh-huh.
That is a wonderful joke. a truly perfect joke for this. And I love that, like, the best thing about those, because that was one of my favorite things about the comic, was that scene. And the thing I loved most about it was that John Kent can see all the little identifying caption boxes, but readers can't because people are standing in the way, which is delightful.
Yeah, it's great. I loved that gag. I loved so many of the little details in here, like the repeated joke about, like, John Kent keeps asking all these questions about stuff that is confusing to him. And he keeps getting told, well, we have an orientation for you, and if you saw the orientation, you would know this. You know, that's a great little gag.
It's a really good little gag. And like, it's very Bendis-y. It's very Bendis-y. But it also is genuinely, like, a funny gag. And we've talked before, like, I think both of us are very surprised at how well Bendis has just fit right into the DC universe with this stuff. And,
well, I feel like Bendis has a certain reputation for doing a certain kind of story well. And at Marvel, he didn't exactly do, like, the bright, shiny superhero stuff the best. But at DC, it's been working great.
Yeah. And, I mean, obviously, Superman is the most DC comic. But, like, Legion is the most DC comic, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I get you.
It's a FHO, Matt. It is for hardcores only. but yeah, like, I think the approach to this, it's funny, it's interesting. Visually, it's stunning. I really loved the art in this book, which I don't think we've talked about yet.
Ryan Sook.
Yeah.
So obviously it's going to look good.
Who's very good. Yes.
Yeah. It looks so good.
Just truly excellent stuff. And it feels very much like a modern Legion, but if we're being honest, the last few attempts at the Legion have not felt modern, because the last few attempts at Legion were going backwards. It was, you know, Jim Shooter coming back, and it was like Paul Levitz coming back, and that should never be a book about going backwards. And before that, it was Mark Waid coming back, and then it was that we shall not speak of the Lightning Saga.
Oh yeah, woof. It's very odd to me. Or I don't know that it's odd. It's interesting to me that we seem to be breaking out of an era of characters on these huge teams wearing matching costumes.
I miss that.
The modern thing to do is to have characters, like, the 2019 thing to do is to give characters, like, very distinct, not uniform-like costumes after years and years of them having uniforms, because the Legion had uniforms for decades.
Well, they did and they didn't.
They certainly costumes that were of a piece, that, yeah, that were similar to each other.
The 90s, like, Legion costumes that were all of the same design, the sandwich costumes, I think are beautiful. I love those suits.
Yeah, they're well designed, but that approach seems weirdly dated now, because all these Legion costumes, at least to my eye, are very uniquely designed.
Mm-hmm.
They're not uniforms. Yeah. And it's what is happening in X-Men right now, too.
We have talked about talking more about costumes. And I think our argument has been whether or not it would work to go really deep into something that is purely visual in podcast form. But, like, I want there to be more matching costumes. I want the X-Men. Because, you know, weirdly enough, we also got New Mutants this week, which is that what we're going to talk about?
We're going to talk about X-Force, but
okay. We got New Mutants this week where there are uniforms. But again, they are, like, you know, similar costumes that are variations on a theme. And I love that. I loved it when the Legion had uniforms. I loved it when the X-Men all wore jackets and sweaters. That shit ruled. I love a good uniform, Matt.
I mean, I love the X Factor costumes that are just a big X. But it seems like now very distinct character costumes that don't necessarily match each other are the thing. And that is a good way for us to slide into talking about X-Force number one, where characters definitely have very distinct looks. Talk about a recent book like the Rick Remender X-Force, those are very uniform like costumes, or at least like everybody was wearing the same colors, you know?
Yeah.
This X-Force, everybody's wearing very different costumes. And this book has a very different look from the other X-Men books since this Dawn of X relaunch.
Mm-hmm. Is that what it's called? Dawn of X?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. Benjamin Percy is writing this. The art is by Joshua Cassara. And the colors are by Dean White. And I think the colors are part of why it looks so different. But also the pencils are certainly they have a rougher edge to them. Mm-hmm. It's that X-Force kind of look, I suppose.
It definitely has a different feel than Hoxbox and even like the stuff that we've seen coming out of that, like New Mutants, which I also read and enjoyed, and like Marauders. It's definitely a book that looks like X-Force, and I do not mean that in any kind of bad way. I am here for it.
I will say I think it's probably my least favorite of the X-Men books that I've read so far.
Okay.
Because one, I'm not totally sure how it's distinguishing itself from the other books, particularly Marauders. Because there's a huge chunk of this first issue where the Marauders show up and are talked about, and their mission is talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And X-Force is discussed in having a mission that is seems very similar to the Marauders' mission,
mm-hmm.
which is to, you know, go save mutants that are stuck in other countries.
Well, they're not. That's not what X-Force's mission is. X-Force's mission is to take out people that are threatening Krakoa.
Right, and this issue ends, and spoilers for this if you want to skip ahead. This issue ends with a full-on attack on Krakoa.
Yeah. If we're really getting spoilery, this issue ends with Professor X getting shot in the head. Which is bold.
It's very bold.
And I think permanent. I think that's going to be reflected in all the other books as a permanent change to the status quo.
Well, that's part of maybe why this book didn't hit with me so much, because so much of the X-Men books up to this point have been about, like, look, death doesn't matter. These characters are all – they come back all the time. Like, Professor X has re-downloaded twice already.
Mm-hmm.
So we know Professor X isn't dead, which, you know, so those stakes are not there. And also I was kind of thrown off the scent by a very distinctive panel of Professor X drinking from a champagne glass,
mm-hmm.
which seemed to highly imply that champagne was poisoned. But then nothing came of that.
I think it had, like, nanites in it.
Maybe. There's a whole section in here where Professor X... But another part of what's going on is there's pressure. The mutants are putting pressure on the countries that have not yet agreed to buy their drugs in exchange for...
to buy the mutant drugs.
To buy their mutant drugs in exchange for essentially recognizing Krakoa as a nation.
Mm-hmm.
There's pressure being put on them to essentially sign up and agree to recognize the sovereignty of Krakoa. And so Professor X goes to Sokovia, which is a country you may have heard of before, a fictional nation. And they say, oh, yes, we're ready to sign on now. We're ready to agree to bring the drugs here. We think it's going to help us out a lot. And there's this big celebration, and Professor X takes a big swig of champagne.
A little bit of bubbly.
And there's a big, big close-up on his mouth drinking the champagne. And that would not be there if it was not significant somehow, I have to believe.
Yeah. I thought there was something in that you could see in the champagne, but I could not tell what it was. But I assume we'll figure it out later. I'll tell you this. Yes, I think the stakes of shooting Professor X in the head in this book are zero. This is the most I have ever in my life, of being into the X-Men. This is the most I have ever given half a shit about Black Tom Cassidy.
You know what I was thinking about Black Tom the entire time I was reading this?
What?
They Worfed him. He's the Worf of Krakoa.
Yeah, but Matt, he's Black Tom Cassidy. He's yeah. Like, if he gets anything done, it's a plus.
He's Black Tom Cassidy, and he got Worfed. They keep calling him the Ward of the Island.
Mm-hmm.
What that really is Chief Security Officer.
Yeah.
Like, the part of, like, what occupied my brain the entire time I was reading this issue is, like, we've sort of Star Trek'd the X-Men, where everybody has, like, their rank and their position on the crew of Krakoa.
Hell yes, my dude. Do you know who doesn't have a problem with that?
Oh, I know you don't. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes – so is Wolverine – what's Wolverine then? Is Wolverine Riker?
I think Cyclops is Riker.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. I can see Cyclops being Riker. Obviously, Professor X, Picard.
Professor X is obviously Picard, yeah.
Magneto is like Gul Dukat, I think.
Magneto is some kind of like admiral back at Starfleet Academy or something.
Jellico.
Apocalypse is Q.
No, Mr. Sinister is Q.
Okay. Certainly personality wise.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know all the one-to-one comparisons, but it certainly does feel like sorta kinda Star Trek-y.
Yeah, man. I'm into it. I am here to experience that. That I am ready for it. I wasn't even thinking about it, but now that you've said it, I'm like, yes, that's exactly what we have done, and this is exactly what I want. So I'm psyched.
Okay.
I enjoyed X-Force. I think the idea of it is going to be really good. I think that I've enjoyed a lot of what I've read from Ben Percy before. And I feel like he knows that we know that Professor X is not not dead, but I feel like it's going to go somewhere. And look, I could be wrong, but I do feel like it's going to go somewhere that maybe we don't expect it to go.
Yeah, and look, I don't want to imply that I thought this was bad. I think you liked it more than me, and I think it's my least favorite of the X-Men books that I've read so far, but I did not think it was bad at all.
Yeah.
I just think the cliffhanger that's there being the cliffhanger that it is does not have the impact that it would outside of the context of all the other X-Men stuff that's been coming out.
Mm-hmm.
All right. One last comic that we're going to talk about. Chris, you read this one. I did not get a chance to, but I'm very excited to hear about it. That's Wonder Twins number 9.
Yeah. I don't think we ever do this, but there is a section of this book that I just want to read verbatim. And if you don't know, Wonder Twins is the book about the Wonder Twins. And it is written by Mark Russell. And the art, if I can find the title page, because the cover says Byrne, and I know it's not John. Stephen Byrne. It's written by Mark Russell. The art is by Stephen Byrne. And it's very much the current Mark Russell book, right? Like the satirical, funny, superhero Mark Russell book. But this one is all about how Zan and Jaina, the Wonder Twins, are descended from a war criminal. Like the past of their planet involved like sending everyone who dissented to the Phantom Zone. And when they were little and they would ask about their grandfather, their dad wouldn't tell them. And then they find out that he was the one who did the sending to the Phantom Zone. And that's why they left. That's why they left their home planet. And they get into a conversation with Superman about it. Jaina says, is that what life is? Being the beneficiary of crimes you can never make right? Constantly trying to outrun our shame, knowing that it will find us wherever we go? And Superman says, It's sometimes easier to see the world as the epilogue to the mistakes of our ancestors, rather than the prologue of our resilience. We're all born to disasters not of our own making, but that doesn't mean we're doomed, and it does not absolve us from creating something better, because in a world filled with destruction, the act of life is reclaiming what we can from the wreckage. The past is gone, and we can never make up for the horrors committed in our name. But repairing the damage of the past is not only our duty, it's the only thing we do that matters, because in the end, that's what we are, the parts of the world we decided to keep, and those which we should have thrown away. That's fucking incredible. Matt, that's amazing. That's Wonder Twins. And like, we've been at this Mark Russell game for a couple years now. And this is very reminiscent of the time there was a conversation about what it means to choose to be with someone forever and whether it's out of fear or out of love that happened in Flintstones. But it will never cease to amaze me that there is dialogue like that and conversations like that that are happening in Wonder Twins, a book that I don't know if anyone's reading. So if you haven't been reading Wonder Twins, like, it's also very funny and it's also very wacky. And I think I've talked before about Jaina going on a date with a aspiring supervillain named Red Flag, who speaks very poorly of his exes and doesn't tip. But, like, Superman saying that we are the things that we choose to keep and the things we should have thrown away is... That's like Mr. Miracle-level writing going on in this book. And if you are sleeping on it, check it out, because it's really, really good stuff.
All right, that's a recommendation, if I've ever heard one.
Highly wrecked. And highly wrecked.
It's going to lead us into making some more recommendations. Chris, it's time for Rex Remix. Well, Chris, I want to kick things off on the Rex Remix by talking about something you have mentioned in your rec like 2 weeks in a row.
Mm-hmm.
That is the video game Blasphemous.
Yeah.
Because I bit the bullet and got it. And played it a good amount. I really played it one kind of lengthy session, and I haven't gotten back to it since that mm-hmm. one lengthy session, but I got a pretty good impression of what that game is.
Yeah, it definitely front loads what it's going to be about for the next little bit, I think.
And you sort of presented it to me as something very akin to the Dark Souls games or Bloodborne, and can confirm.
Okay, good.
It is very much in the style of a side-scrolling Dark Souls or Bloodborne, partially in the way that the story is told, because you get these kind of like obtuse cutscenes, and then there's a lot of story in the item descriptions,
mm-hmm.
which is absolutely a thing Dark Souls and Bloodborne do, where they hide the stories in item description, the story in item descriptions. Also, the difficulty is around Bloodborne level, and it includes the thing that It's not bad, but it is sometimes the thing that frustrates me most about those types of games, which is that when you die, you have to go back and pick up a thing to be like whole again. And I'll tell you the time that I turned off the game.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, fuck this. I'll play it again later. I just kind of went off exploring. And perhaps earlier than I should have, I went to a section of the map that's essentially the ice zone.
Yeah.
And
you're talking about where olive trees wither.
That's the one.
Yeah.
And I got further away from the checkpoint than I was comfortable with going back to after I respawned to try to go get my stuff back.
Now, to go get your guilt?
To get my guilt, yeah. So in Dark Souls, that would be your souls. In Bloodborne, those would be blood echoes. In Blasphemous, it's called your guilt. And it is a little different in Blasphemous than it is in those games. Because in Blasphemous, it's about like your magic ability gets cut in half or taken away. You get to keep your currency, though, if you die.
Yeah.
In Bloodborne Dark Souls, you lose all of your currency to, like, upgrade with until you go get it after you die. So that is the main difference I see in Blasphemous. But a lot of the mechanics and stuff, like the checkpoints, like the sort of leveling up system and so on and so forth, very similar to Bloodborne and Dark Souls. You were not incorrect in making that comparison.
Yeah. I have never played Bloodborne or Dark Souls. I do not particularly enjoy being frustrated, which, you know, I have talked to you about it, and I know that you have said before Bloodborne is your favorite video game.
Yeah, I will stick with that.
Bloodborne and Super Metroid are what Matt Wilson is here for.
It's what I crave.
But I have played a bunch of games that have lifted that. I'm actually currently, while I wait for Pokemon to come out at the end of this week, I'm replaying Hollow Knight because I watched, and I think this will count as a rec, the Game Maker's Toolkit YouTube channel that you and I have talked about in the past, really enjoying, did a new installment of Boss Keys, which is his look back at the structure of Metroidvanias, like specifically like Zelda games and Metroid games.
It's called Boss Keys because it all started with Zelda games.
Yeah. But there's a 40-minute one that's all about the world design of Hollow Knight, and I was watching that and I was like, dang, it's been like, it's probably been like a year since I played Hollow Knight, and that's probably the best Metroidvania ever. So I'm like currently replaying Hollow Knight, which is another one where when you die, you gotta go fight a thing that has all your money. And that's been in this game. It's been in Oblivion. It's in Salt and Sanctuary, where you can like permanently lose everything. And these are games that I have played because I like Metroidvanias and didn't realize that was a Dark Souls thing. And now I'm like, fuck Dark Souls. Because that's very annoying to me.
It's punishing.
Yeah.
Those games can be punishing.
Yeah. This is going to make me sound like an idiot who should not be talking about video games, but I kind of didn't realize how influential Dark Souls had been until I really started like watching like videos about different aspects of it, which there are a lot of really good ones, and I imagine a lot of really bad ones out there too. But yeah, I kind of didn't know it was as big a deal as it is. Because it turns out it's a big deal.
The Dark Souls clone is a genre unto itself.
Yeah.
For sure. And I don't think Dark Souls is the most popular game series of the 2010s, but probably the most influential.
I suspect that is the case, given what I now know and what I have experienced in, you know, the type of games that I do enjoy, which are where you walk around and hit things with a sword in a side-scrolling large world.
All right, Chris, I just wanted to catch up on that recommendation, sort of follow up on it, I suppose. But what else we got? What else we recommending and talking about?
Well, Matt, I have an anti-rec that we've been meaning to get to for a while.
I'm excited to hear it.
Hey, Matt, is it Joe time?
Ding, 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 ding. Joe time.
How did that movie come out and not have, like, an ad where it's like, Joe da Man, Joker, in theaters now?
But, well, I know how it didn't do that, because it's being promoted as real serious cinema.
Oh, right. It's not a dumb, stupid comic book superhero movie.
Right.
Right, I forgot that. The reason I forgot that is because it has fucking Batman in it, and if you're going to make a movie that's not a superhero movie, you should probably try not to put Batman in it.
It's not based on any comic, Chris. There's no comics basis for this movie.
Matt, I do have some bad news. It does have Batman in it, and also the Joker from Batman.
No, it's actual Batman in it.
I mean, Bruce Wayne's in it.
Yeah. I knew that much.
Little baby Brucey.
Little baby Bruce.
Little baby Billy.
Oh, don't you dare cross those streams on me.
Little Bruce Wayne running through the house with a pickle in his mouth. We were gonna do some BOKO about it, and obviously we have ended up talking about it here. It's bad, Matt. It's really bad.
Now, I remember immediately after you saw it, you made an effort to tell me that there's a line in the movie where Joker says, all my life I thought, I thought my life was a tragedy, but turns out it's a comedy.
Turns out it's a fucking comedy.
What I did not have the heart to tell you at that moment is that line is in the trailer.
Yeah, they put that shit in the trailers, Matt. They're like, this will make people want to see it. That is, like, if I wrote that line, any, I would have to take it out. Like, someone would make me take that line out, because it's very bad. I used to think my life was a tragedy. Now I realize it's a fucking comedy. I like it because the Joker says a cuss bomb.
Well, he doesn't say the cuss bomb in the trailer, but
no,
yeah.
He does say it in the movie, though. I watched Joker, which I think is the way it should be and probably will be seen for the most part, like the true experience. You know, a lot of people talk about, like, what's the true experience of, like, seeing The Shining. I feel like the true experience of seeing the Joker is that I was a white dude alone in the theater, sitting between two other white dudes who were alone in the theater, and just having a real nice time watching Joker. The difference is that I brought a notebook because I had to write about it afterwards, and I felt like such a fucking asshole sitting there in the theater making notes about the movie Joker, which were mostly like, I cannot believe this movie.
I mean, I was sitting in the theater making notes about Child's Play 2019.
Well, yeah, so, which I hear that you were not fond of.
Not crazy about that movie. But I know exactly the feeling that you're talking about.
Yeah. It's like, you know, we talked about the experience of watching Jared Leto in Suicide Squad and how it's just tragic to watch someone put that much effort and get that little out of it.
Yeah.
And I feel like the Joaquin Phoenix performance is like a better performance with like the same level of writing. Like the same, like putting a lot of effort into it. And then you're saying things like, it's like if someone was committing to an like what they like this is what they want to win the Oscar for, right? And so that's the level that they're acting at, and then all they're doing is like reading t-shirts that you get at Hot Topic. Like, it would not have been out of place for Joker to say, they laughed at me because I was different, but I laughed at them because they're all the same.
Here's a serious question for you, Chris.
I would love it if you asked me a serious question, Max. This is a serious film.
It's a serious question about a serious film. Is there a twist?
I mean, sort of. There's a twist that is, like, ridiculously obvious.
I know there's that plot twist.
Yeah.
Which we won't spoil. I got spoiled for it a long time ago. And, you know, did not make me want to see the movie anymore.
Wait, which one are you talking about?
About his parentage.
Okay, no, that's not the one I'm talking about. I'm talking about the love interest twist.
Oh, okay. I think I know that one too.
Yeah. Which I like is like as like I am not like great at picking out plot twists. I don't want to like sound like I am saying that I figured something out very easily. But like I figured out the twist with the love interest the first time the two characters interacted, and it's a bummer. It's a real bummer, Matt.
Yeah. I guess I know we don't want to like give away the movie because it's still in theaters.
But like, yeah, but no one should see it. Like, if I can keep someone from seeing it, like that's a good deed. Like, I will feel like a good Samaritan if I can make someone not see that movie.
I guess the thing I just have a really hard time wrapping my head around is like, what occurs in this movie that isn't just the very straightforward story of a guy becoming a murderer? Or is that it? Is that the whole thing?
I mean, he puts on clown makeup.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's pretty much it. Like, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, it's not a good Joker movie because, and this is a secret that I can let you in on as someone who has read the majority of Batman comics that have been published. Joker's not a good solo character. He's a good villain. He's a good antagonist. He's like a great antagonist. But antagonists can't carry a story because then the antagonists become the protagonists. And Joker's not a good protagonist. He can't carry a story by himself. It has been tried and doesn't work. And look, I'm saying this, and unfortunately that movie made a lot of money, and then also every terrible publication got to use Laughing All the Way to the Bank in their headline. But like, that's the fundamental problem with this movie is that it's messaging and theming are like non-existent. Like it is a movie. It's a movie that's shouting, but not saying anything. And there's like, it's honest to God, Matt, not clear whose side we're supposed to be on because
who's on the other side?
Yeah. Like that's the thing. Everybody that Joker kills, with the exception of one murder that may or may not happen because it happens off screen, but it absolutely happens. Like, spoiler warning, it absolutely happens. Like, everyone is presented as being at least somewhat justified. And, like, the people who are, you know, inspired by the Joker are the people who are, like, protesting because, like, rich people, it's the people in the trailer with the protest signs that say we are all clowns. Like, and those people are like objectively correct because the opposite side of that is Thomas Wayne, who is a billionaire and an asshole. And so at one point the Joker clown protesters, like one of them is literally holding a sign that says resist. and this movie is set in 1984. That's the kind of like consistency that this movie has, which is to say, none at all. But Joker says, "Oh, I'm not political," and he doesn't mean to inspire the people to riot and hate the rich. But everyone he kills is like a revenge thing. Like, he kills a guy who is like terrible to him at work. The first time he kills somebody is like they're the dudes who are beating him up on the subway. And they're like supposed to be these three Wall Street finance bros who, as Glenn Weldon pointed out, sing three full verses of Send In the Clowns.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
Just so fucking dumb. So they're kicking him. And then he pulls out a gun and shoots him. And then he chases the last one down, who he wounds and shoots him. And so, by the way, side note, the article that I had to come home and write about it was Easter Eggs You Missed in Joker, which meant that I had to, like, in an article about the movie Joker, about the clown that fights Batman, I had to explain who Bernie Goetz was, which wasn't fun for me or anyone. It's that kind of movie where, like, I don't know, maybe he's right. Unless you don't want him to be right, in which case, oh, he was, you know. He was just, he went off his meds and went crazy. Or were we all crazy because we live in this sick society that did this to him? But, I mean, you know, he did shoot that guy in the face on live TV. Can I tell you my single favorite part of Joker?
Please do.
Glenn Weldon, either Glenn Weldon or Matt Singer in their reviews, wrote about how this is a movie that opens with a bunch of people surrounding a man and beating him up while saying "beat him up," and that's like the level of nuance that goes into the writing here, and that is true. But my favorite example of this is when Joker kills one of his coworkers, right? Like I mentioned that, and there is another one of his coworkers who is in the room that he does not kill because he is a nice person, and the Joker is justified in stabbing people in the neck with scissors, I guess. So he's like all of a sudden, like big surprise, pulls out, the scissors and stabs the dude in the throat. And the other guy goes, "Oh no, why'd you do that?" And that was one of two times that I laughed in Joker. The other one is a very funny, like actually really funny physical comedy moment where the Joker walks into a glass door.
Yeah. I will say, if I was in an office where someone stabbed someone else in the throat with scissors, I might also say, "Oh no, why'd you do that?" I mean, I would probably just run away.
I think you would probably be a little more creative than that, Matt.
I don't know that that would be my perfect moment of creativity.
I actually think that you might go, "Eh."
It's a living.
So yeah, don't go see Joker. Someone asked me how it compared to Catwoman, and I said it is technically better, morally worse, and the writing is about the same. So make of that what you will. I stand by that. It's about as well written as Catwoman.
Yeah, I it's interesting to me that the debate about that movie became about sort of like the moral grounding of it when I think the most incisive reviews about it I saw essentially said it's a movie with nothing to say.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why the Joker never had an origin story before now.
Yeah.
Because it's not interesting.
It's not interesting. It's absolutely
Who cares?
Not interesting.
The AV Club review of that movie is spot on. Because it talks about how in The Dark Knight, the Joker in that movie, the Heath Ledger Joker, constantly asks people, "You want to know how I got these scars?" And then he tells different stories.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter. And it adds more to the Joker character to not know. Because what do you get out of knowing? He was a sad guy? Does that make the Joker more interesting?
He's might seduce your dad guy.
he's the bad guy.
One last thing, and Matt, you can tell me if this is just me being cynical, but like, to me, it felt like really obvious. It felt to me like a lot of the coverage surrounding Joker of like, oh, there's going to be like increased security in the theaters and, you know, no costumes and all that. Like, that definitely struck me as having an air of marketing to it. And then I feel like there were pieces of the media that were very disappointed that nothing happened. And like, there was kind of a, and it just like the whole thing just made me feel super gross for having gone to see it, even though I was like seeing it for work.
Yeah, I understand that totally.
Yeah.
Well, while we're on the topic of DC entertainment, we got to talk a little bit about Watchmen, I think.
Okay.
We talked about it last week briefly and said we were both holding off on it as recommendations. And even though this is Rex Remix, the third episode, which just aired at the time that we're recording this, I guess there will be a fourth by the time the episode goes up. But
yeah, I have not seen the third one yet, by the way. It's been a very busy week.
It made me even more unsure about whether I would wreck it or not.
That's Chris, really interesting.
I'm very interested for you to watch this third episode, which is all about Laurie, which is all about.
Which is very exciting.
Yeah.
Like, which I can't believe. I can't believe I'm excited. Like, I can't believe that I'm genuinely excited to see Laurie Jaspasek show up on a television show. Because DC has successfully spent the last 30 years making me never want to think about Watchmen again.
Sure.
An objectively very good comic. But like, that first episode was really good.
I think you liked it more than me. There were maybe certain things in that first episode that I thought were maybe a little on the nose. And I think that those things were any direct reference to the original Watchmen comic. I think everything that wasn't about the original Watchmen comic was the most interesting thing about the show. And I think that has remained true. Mm-hmm. And the third episode has more about the original Watchmen comic. And I described some of the dialogue and other elements of that episode as positively Johnsian.
I've heard that about the new episode, and I'm very interested to see how that plays out because, again, I really enjoyed the first one, but, like, I also really liked it when, like, you know, the cops were flying around in Archie the Owl ship. Like, I was, like, very stoked about that in a way that I did not expect to be. In a way that, like, I feel like I would roll my eyes at if that first episode was not as good as I think it was. Which, you know, which a lot of it has to do with the performances. Regina King's fucking rad in that show.
She's really good. And Don Johnson is good in that first episode. Louis Gossett is really good when he gets more of a spotlight in the second episode.
That's right. Our boy Chappie.
And I really like Tim Blake Nelson in the show. I think Tim Blake Nelson might be the unsung hero of the show.
I have never seen Aiden have a reaction to something, so like some nerd shit that is like my reaction, until she like was like, "Oh my god, he's a reverse Rorschach! Fuck!" Like, and I was like, "Yeah, that's how I feel." Like that, oh my god, that's so dumb, it's actually brilliant. Which, the reverse Rorschach, who's a mirror? That shit's good, Matt.
Yes, there's a good bit about the show that's good. I think the performances really elevate it. I think it's really well directed. Like, the show looks really good, so that helps it. Mm-hmm. I just, like, the thing that I thought was the weakest about the first episode was the message from the essentially the Rorschach cult, the cavalry, where they're quoting Rorschach's journal.
I love that.
It felt weirdly forced to me.
Well, the reason I loved it is because they're fans who don't get it. And anybody can quote it, but they don't get it. They think Rorschach was the good guy. And so they can, like, quote the book, but they don't understand it.
Yeah,
and it's that is a thing I have had to deal with my entire life.
I absolutely buy that. It's not so much the message of it than the presentation of it that bugged me. And there is more of that in episode 3. I'll tell you this much about something that happens in episode 3, Chris.
Hit me.
There is a motif that runs throughout the episode where Lori is sending a message to Dr. Manhattan.
Okay.
Who is on Mars.
Right.
I do not
know.
Are you
sure he's not in the DC universe? Superman?
Well, I guess we'll find out. Yeah. But the common knowledge is that he is on Mars.
Okay.
And apparently there are phone booths where you can just go and like pay a certain amount of money to talk to Dr. Manhattan for a while.
Okay. See, Matt, you're saying that and it sounds great.
No, that's not the dumb part. That part is actually kind of great. She tells Dr. Manhattan a joke. And this joke runs through the entire episode. And I feel like, well, first of all, it's not funny. First and foremost, not funny. Second, I think it's supposed to be like heavily loaded with meaning.
Okay.
But I could not wrap my head around what I was supposed to get from it. It either blew by me completely, or it was some pseudo-intellectual bullshit. I won't say for sure it's one or the other, but I did not get out of it what I felt like the show was implying that I should be getting out of it. And so I'm interested to hear your take when you watch the episode.
Yeah, like I think it could all go south, but I will say that I do think the first episode was very good television, and very enjoyable television, and felt more like a post-Watchmen thing that understood Watchmen than any other like post-Watchmen thing I have experienced, which of course is only Doomsday Clock because nothing else exists.
Yeah, I mean I can also agree, like, despite my gripes and complaints about the show, it is easily the most digestible, most palatable, most well-considered Watchmen sequel or other piece of Watchmen besides the original book that I've seen. It does a better job of understanding Watchmen than anything else has done. Yes.
Matt, I think there's another thing that you and I want to talk about I don't think we've really had a chance to talk too much about it with each other. We have chatted online about it a little bit, but I am very excited about this current wave of wrestling that feels like old wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, well, in one case, that is absolutely exactly what it is, and that is NWA Power.
No, say it right.
Power.
NWA Power. Which, if you don't know, NWA Power, you can watch it for free on YouTube. It is... So Billy Corgan bought the NWA. I don't know if that's common knowledge outside of our circles. But, like, William Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins, he bought NWA, and so they are doing a show that is essentially like the old, championship wrestling from Georgia show, where it's a very small crowd in, like, a studio with, like, interviews and stuff taking place right next to the ring. It is very consciously evoking very old school wrestling.
Yeah, it's not just like Georgia Championship Wrestling. It's in the same studio as Georgia Championship Wrestling was.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, they are in the same building.
Wow, okay.
So it's very much meant to evoke that old style of wrestling. It's almost a parody of it. It's not.
There are parodical aspects of it in these weird fake question mark ads that they're doing.
Yeah, they're fake.
I mean, I know the one for the House of Waffles and Tire Irons is fake, but I thought the one for the wrestling school might be real.
The one for the wrestling school might be real. There is a very unfortunate one with Austin Idol that I won't get into on a more recent episode. But yeah, those ads are definitely fake.
I really liked Austin Idol coming back. Oh no.
Buddy, I'll tell you something off air. But it's mostly a very fun show. I like the people on it. I think Ricky Starks is kind of making himself a star with it. Mm-hmm. It is wild that the first main event on the first episode of Power was between Nick Aldis, who is the current NWA champion, who is like very much in the old-fashioned champion mold,
mm-hmm.
and a literal 60-year-old man.
A very old man.
Named Tim Storm. There are two wrestlers on that show with the last name Storm, and they've never addressed it.
Are you talking about the cowboy James Storm?
And this guy, Tim Storm.
National champion with the wonderfully terrible belt?
Yes, that's the one. But Tim Storm, it looks like George Licker from Ren and Stimpy. Not to evoke Ren and Stimpy, but it's exactly what he looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, it's, yes, old in so many ways is that show.
I will say, I do really like that aesthetic, and I think it does really work for a wrestling promotion. Like, I think it is a very interesting way to structure a wrestling show.
It's something that can only happen, I think, in the era of YouTube, because I don't think any TV network would take this.
No, absolutely not. Like, yeah. It's so inside baseball. Like, it is so, you have to be able to speak this language to get it. I don't think it has what you would call mass appeal at all.
Yeah. It makes me wonder if there's any attempt to shop this around as a TV show.
I have heard that that is the point of it, but
I don't think it would air. I don't think it would air even on like the nichiest of niche channels though.
But a thing that I really like about it is for so long, you know, the pro wrestling that is on television has basically been dictated by what Monday Night Raw is, you know? And it's not the only way to do televised pro wrestling. And I like that there is something that is a bizarre little, it's not a house show. It's not like an indie show with no cameras. But it's also not like, not a real television show either.
Yeah, it's a counterpoint of sorts. And it's got like Colt Cabana.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
And there's, you know, Eddie Kingston is on there, who's someone I like quite a bit. I've seen that dude wrestle in a community center.
Eddie Kingston threw my beer once.
Yes, he did.
At a Chikara show.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting stuff.
Interesting stuff.
I do really want one of those NWA World Title lapel pins.
They are cool. Yes,
they are cool. They are also $20.
The show that I think it's maybe a little reductive to call like old wrestling, even though it's not wrong per se, is AEW Dynamite, which. Yes, does feel like Nitro. It does.
But AEW, Wednesday Night Dynamite, is the 25th anniversary G.I. Joe action figures of professional wrestling.
I'm waiting.
Would you like me to elaborate?
Yes.
I'll elaborate. The 25th anniversary G.I. Joes were really good figures, but they are best described as being like what you remember G.I. Joes being. Because like if you sit a Snake Eyes down next to the original like 80s Snake Eyes, it is clearly not the same figure. Like there's a lot of differences, and it makes the flaws of the original one, or not even flaws, but maybe shortcomings, very apparent, because it's like not as detailed, it's not, you know, it doesn't hold together as well. It's like the idealized version of what you wanted it to be. And that's how I feel about Dynamite and Nitro, because I am a person who goes back and watches Nitros every now and then. And it is a show with shortcomings, Matt.
It certainly is. I think a lot gets lost when you're not watching it live. And
yes,
I think a big part of the appeal of Dynamite is watching it live, which is why I have made the choice to always watch Dynamite when it's on and then catch up on NXT later, because I'm used to watching NXT later. So a big part of the draw for me of Dynamite is seeing it as it's happening. Not to say that there wouldn't be an appeal to watching it on like DVR, but I really like watching that show live.
Yeah. And again, I feel like it magnifies what was good about the WCW shows, and also kind of it addresses some very specific flaws in WWE programming. Like I took a little survey about it that like TNT put up, and it was like, what did you like about last week's episode? And I like, it was 8:03 and there was a wrestling match on my television. And I liked that. I do think the show could use some more promos. They're like the only person who I believe has had mic time. Like the only people are Cody Rhodes and Chris Jericho. I don't think anyone else has cut a promo on this show.
Let's see. There's been video packages.
There have been a few.
Pac has done a promo. Moxley's done a promo.
Okay.
There have been other promos. There have.
Yeah. But not it is certainly like not a focus on the show, which I think you can stack up to the fact that like the people running it are relatively young and kind of like understand YouTube. And if you don't have cable or don't want to like watch Wednesday Night Dynamite at 8 o'clock on TNT, then like they have an entire show, like an entire hour long show every week that they just put up on YouTube. And they have like all of the, there is stuff on the AEW YouTube channel like every day that is like advancing storylines, and it's not like, it's their dark matches. So it's matches that they don't put on TV, but their dark matches will be like Kenny Omega in the, yeah. You know, like it'll be like the big names of the company in addition to like some of the lesser known wrestlers. And I think that is very, very cool.
I do too. I think they're doing more story on the show. Like as of this recording, it will have been 2 episodes ago. They probably had their most story heavy episode. It was all like main event story stuff. It's the episode where Dustin got his arm shut in a car door. Dustin Rhodes.
Mm-hmm. Man, that happens to him a lot.
Yeah, it does. But that's my favorite single episode of Dynamite so far. Unfortunately, it was the least watched episode of Dynamite because of the World Series.
Yeah. It was also very or less watched because Aiden was playing Overwatch that night.
Oh yeah, so that
so
was
it didn't
one Nielsen rating. It didn't pop.
Yeah, it didn't quite get the like. There were certain territories where it didn't air.
But it's my favorite episode of Dynamite, easily, based on the amount of story. And I'll say this: not having so many promos and not opening each episode with a 20-minute promo and not focusing on somebody in the ring with a microphone talking, recapping the story, and instead having the promos be a character from their own perspective saying something in their own words with passion, it makes those promos so much more effective.
It really does. And it also like puts the focus on, again, we always talk about comics that do things you can only do in comics, right?
Yeah.
And the thing that you can do in pro wrestling is use physicality to tell a story in the ring. I mean, you know, you've talked about Moxley cutting promos and Kenny Omega has cut promos, but like their feud that they're having right now, I don't think needs those promos because they have done a very good job of telling that story with their bodies.
Yeah.
And that is like, I love that. When that works, oh, mwah, it's the best.
We know Kenny Omega. We've yes. seen Kenny Omega matches. We know his deal. I do think there could be some benefit from doing some work to introduce Kenny Omega to a broader audience. Explain a little more about why he's the best wrestler in the world. I mean, they can't show the New Japan matches, obviously. But, you know, I think doing a little more of that heavy lifting would be worth doing. But all in all, like, the effectiveness of the Cody promo, I almost said Cody Rhodes because that's his name, but they can't call him Rhodes for legal reasons. The Cody Rhodes promo from the most recent episode of Dynamite is one of the best promos on television I've seen in years.
Yeah, no joke. It was incredible. It was passionate. It was like rooted, it was storytelling that does the, you know, take real life and turn it up to 11 thing that WWE always tries to sell to you. But man, it worked. It really worked.
It's so good. And it's not like Cody was doing anything magical with his words. He just had passion behind what he was saying. And like ripping on Jericho's book being $3 on Amazon, which is hilarious.
Too real.
Too real, yes. But also funny. And like just like so good. Like, yeah, like, and I felt really that way incredible. About a bunch of promos on the show. Like, Jericho had a great entering promo. Moxley has had some good promos. Like, they need to give the women some mic time.
Yes. The women definitely need more mic time. I feel like I would love to know more about Dr. Britt Baker, DMD.
There was, on the last AEW Dark, there was a really good video package about Britt Baker. Where she was
Dr. Britt Baker, TMD.
That's right. Where she was using medical terminology, talking about how she was going to put Bea Priestley, her opponent at Full Gear, in a nerve hold in her mouth and basically be able to rip her jaw off. But she was saying that using medical terminology, and that was great.
Yeah.
I loved that. But like any more of that kind of stuff, I'm here to see it, and I am so close to dropping $50 on Full Gear.
if we lived in the same town, if only, because that is how we could justify it.
I know. I wish. I really do wish. Yeah. But, you know.
You should have gotten into this con I'm doing this weekend, then we could have done it. Yeah. Oh. Next time.
But speaking of old wrestling stuff, I do want to talk quickly about a podcast I've been listening to.
Yes.
Which is 83 Weeks with Eric Bischoff. Talking about old Nitros. That show is Eric Bischoff and Conrad Thompson just going through it's not chronological. They're just kind of jumping around in time, looking back at what really happened and how some decisions got made during the rise and fall of WCW. Mm-hmm. Like, I've listened to episodes about the Bash at the Beach 2000.
Ooh.
With the famous Vince Russo politics and bullshit promo.
Which, you know, I love.
I also just listened to a Bash at the Beach 1994 episode.
Interesting.
Which was the first WCW Flair versus Hogan match. So it covers that whole time period that Eric Bischoff was working at WCW. And some stuff, like, I absolutely do not trust Eric Bischoff on. Like, I do not believe he is telling the truth about everything. He will vehemently disagree with essentially anything Dave Meltzer, who is a longtime wrestling journalist, reports.
Mm-hmm.
Like, any kind of rumor from backstage, Bischoff disputes it. Also, fair warning, by about the sixth episode of the show, they start doing ads for something called Blue Chew. Please skip those ads.
Dare I ask?
It's a male enhancement product.
But it's chew?
I don't know. I'm not gonna dig into that.
All right.
That is not why the ads for that product are gross and made me almost want to unsubscribe for the show. There's like personal testimonials in those ads.
Oh boy. Okay. Oh boy.
Don't listen to them. Skip as soon as you hear them say Blue Chew. Hit that 30 seconds ahead button, folks.
One more thing, Matt, about AEW, about NWA Power. For a long time, you know, like every now and then somebody will ask me, like, okay, and they'll ask us, okay, like, if I want to get into wrestling, what do I do? What do I watch? And like, for a long time, the answer has just kind of been like, I don't know, man, it's on like 8 hours a week, just pick a night. But that kind of locks you into watching. I've always said that, you know, the greatest strength of WWE is that it's the wrestling that's on television. And like, even when there are other promotions that have shows, like WWE is the wrestling that's on television. They have the most show, and they still have the most shows that are widely available.
Yeah. They have the most show and the most visible show.
Yeah. And to be fair, they also have legitimately the best roster of talent ever. Like, I don't think there's any disputing that.
Yeah.
The depth of what their money has been able to purchase and then just kind of, you know, have hanging around is
staggering. Well they use the talent, how well they use the talent, up for debate. But yeah, certainly undeniable the level of talent at their fingertips.
Yeah. However, both NWA Power and like AEW Dark are on YouTube, and you can just go watch them. And I feel like they are both, as much as Power is, I think, meant to appeal to nerds, you can watch it and see if you enjoy any part of it. You can watch AEW Dark. It's zero risk involved in setting aside an hour and giving it a watch. And I think that is going to wind up being the best thing about having those promotions. I think AEW is using it very effectively, and obviously that's the only thing that NWA is doing right now, but like, you could, like, finally, it is the accessible wrestling that I think the accessibility has always been there for WWE and never really been there for anything else, even when stuff was on TV. And now I think it's like, oh, this, even if you don't have cable, you've got YouTube. Do you have a phone? Cool, you can watch AEW.
Yeah, and there's plenty of AEW stuff. Like, the full show, Dark, is on YouTube, but also lots of clips from Dynamite go up on YouTube, too. So,
It's a very good time to be a wrestling fan, even though I have not watched WWE since January.
Yeah, I haven't watched WWE probably since SmackDown debuted on Fox. I was watching the shows semi-regularly up to that point, and then everything that happened during the SmackDown debut made me realize I don't need to watch it. I canceled the network, and I don't need to watch it.
I still have the network. Because I do have a tattoo of Stargate 85.
Yeah, you gotta watch Great American Bash 88 sometime.
Yeah, like once a month, I gotta watch 9MTA and Tully Blanchard. I just gotta.
That's fair.
I sure am definitely not watching any shows that might have involved that great roster of talent being stranded in Saudi Arabia.
Oh boy. I think that's a good place for us to hit pause on this Rex remix. Thank you for listening, everybody. We hope you enjoyed all these Rex. If you would like to get in touch with us about something you would like us to check out, for example, that we might recommend on the show later, or if you want to sponsor the show, or you want to drop us a line with an Every Story Ever list, or a listener question, or any other thing that you might want to let us know about, you can do that at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can also send us listener questions on our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. You can check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. Also, please leave us a review on the podcatcher of your choice, whatever it is that you use, whether it be Apple Podcasts or Google Play or Stitcher or whatever thing you use to listen to podcasts. If you can leave us a positive review there, a 5-star review, it would do us a whole lot of good. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the places you can find us online. For me, you can go to mattdwilson.net to find links to everything that I do, my books, my other podcasts, my social medias, and the comics that I have written. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
People can find me by going to the-isb.com. That has links to everything that I do. You can also ask me a question directly if you would like on the Bab website, Twitter. Stay off of it if you can, but if you do want to talk to me directly, I'm at the ISB there.
And that's it for us, everybody.
Yeah, Matt. Good Rex remix.
We came, we Rexed, we conquered.
I feel like we talked about everything this show is about.
We covered a lot of bases. I mean, were there things we did not discuss? Sure.
Garfield.
We did not talk about Garfield. It's been a bit of a Garfield drought on the show for a few weeks.
And I think
Chip on.
And I think we're both sorry about that.
We're sorry and also not sorry.
Yeah, that is also true.
Apparently there's a new Garfield Mario Kart clone on Steam.
I saw that in a very funny move. Someone sent us a tweet. The tweet was from Huge.
Talking about Garfield Kart.
Yeah. Gart.
That's right. The game should have been called Gart. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Have a great week.
We love you.
Mondays, right? We love you. Yeah!
Flash. From this day on.